Very well. My text today will be Matthew chapter 23.
Amen.
And we'll start reading from verse 9. It says, "And call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your father which is in heaven. Neither be ye called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. And whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted." My topic that I would like to bring today is on being a servant. That's one of the places, one of the various places you'll find in the Gospels or in the recorded preachings or speakings of Christ, where I think the stark contrast between our human value system and God's value system is best seen. There's a number of these places where we read them, and the contrast between what God values and what we value really comes to light. Like, for instance, when He talks about denying ourselves, that's not very high on our priority list of Amen. Denying ourselves. One of the more interesting things you might face as a Christian is explaining to an unbeliever why you would not do something simply for not doing it. Kind of like fasting. That's a difficult one sometimes to explain to somebody. Why would you fast? What's the point of that? What's the benefit of that? Where's the profit in that? And, you know, that's awfully hard sometimes to explain to an unbeliever. Take up your cross and follow me. That's something that God values highly, not something that necessarily we value very highly. So that's low on our, if we compare our value systems, many times we could kind of fix our value system just by turning it upside down. And that's kind of what Jesus says is going to happen in the kingdom. Everything's going to be turned upside down, and we're going to find out that's right side up. So this is one of those. When we talk about being a servant, that's not something that we value very highly, generally speaking, at least not individually in our own worldview or our own perspective as in a worldly sense. We don't maybe value that very highly. And yet Christ deals with it. A significant portion of His ministry dealt with this subject of being a servant. But if you think about it, in some ways, there is a very apparent value to being a servant. I know that it conflicts with our American value system, for sure. We don't like that idea at all. Our ideas of Americans is, we don't serve anybody. We threw off the shackles of the king, and we're free men. Born free, free men, and serve nobody. And ever since the emancipation and suffrage, well then, you know, the whole country, we're all free and we don't have to serve anybody. And yet, if we think about it, there is a tremendous value even on a worldly level of being a servant, at least being a good servant. Anyone who's ever run a company knows the value of a good servant. Now, we don't like that term. It's not very PC, probably. If you go and you call your employees servants, you're probably, you know, you might even get slapped with a lawsuit. I don't know. You are my servant. I command you to... And those of you that are employees, you might even be kind of flinching and think, oh, I don't like that word, but maybe you should realize that's exactly what you are. I mean, it's like nowadays, you know, we used to call them stewardesses. Can't call them no more that. You've got to call them flight attendants. And I'm sure within a few years, they'll want to be called something else. And it seems like there's all different places in life where that happens. They want one title, and then it's another. First, you know, we're waiters, and now we're servers. But if you call them a servant, well, then that's not good. So, you know, it's a thing. But let's just stick with the biblical term of servant. And if you ever run a business, you know that having good servants, good employees, makes a huge difference. In fact, it makes the difference. Very, very important to have good employees. They're very valuable for a business. Not only for business, but there's a tremendous value that's seen empirically in the evidence of having what we would call a helper or a servant in marriage. That's why I believe that in the job place, men, married men, statistically make higher wages than women. Now, that isn't the case in the job place in all senses, because the data shows that unmarried women make higher wages than unmarried men. And so when a woman gets married, she lowers her earnings, at least statistically speaking, which shows that having a wife being your helper is a tremendous advantage. When both are unmarried, the men make less money than the women. If the man's unmarried and the woman's unmarried, they don't have children, the women statistically make higher wages than the men. But when they get married, then the men make higher wages than the women do, which shows that you having a wife who takes care of things for you, at least if you have a wife like mine, she takes care of things at home. I'm able to go home and continue the investment I put into my profitability in my business. So I can continue to build things, I can plan, I can do things, and I don't have to be concerned with the things at home. Tremendous help to having a helper. Tremendous value to that. But it's not only a value to those that are helped, or to the employer, it's also a tremendous value to you, if you're here today and you're an employee. Being a good servant adds great value to you. If you would learn how to be a good employee, you would go far in your business. I find that this is one of the most disturbing trends in young men today, is that they don't know how to be good employees. And I find this to be a very bad thing.
Amen.
Not bad for society, even though it is, but speaking specifically, I believe it's bad for you. I realize that you feel that you have a certain job description, and that you should not be asked to do something that falls outside that job description. And probably, legally, you can probably do that and get away with that, and they can't do much about that. But I'm telling you, in my opinion and in my experience, you will not go far in the job place with that mentality.
Amen. That's right.
I've done pretty well in jobs that aren't normally very well paid. And one of the reasons I attribute that to is that I approach every job with the mentality that my job is two things. And they're kind of dependent on each other. If my boss asks me, what's your job description? My job is to make the boss money. And I do so by doing anything that needs to be done. It doesn't matter what it is. And so I don't care at the job place if it's sweeping or vacuuming or if it's installing the toilet partitions or being the measuring. I always end up with employees. I now have employees. And you always have someone who believes that sweeping, that's not my job. I should be the one that measures. I should be the one that lays out. I should be the one. And they all want to do what they think is more befitting of a person of their stature. But I've never approached a job that way. I say never, not in my adult life. I'm sure when I was young, even though I will not attest to it, but I'm sure that my dad would say I was that way. Oh, come on, Danny. But I don't. I don't look at it that way. And I don't think you should. I think you should understand that being a good servant adds tremendous value to you in every sense. It adds value to you in the sense of being a profitable employee, which in the end will be profitable for you. You will make more money in the end if you can provide better value for the money. I think you should look at being an employee along the same lines that you would if you were running a business. I believe they're actually the same thing. I believe each person is a businessman, a small businessman, and your business is your labor. Let's say I sold tomatoes, and Danny sold tomatoes, what would I do to sell more tomatoes than Danny? Well, I would provide more tomatoes for less money. That's what I would do. In the end, that's what I do. Now, there's a number of ways to do that. I could do it by investing in advertising, but that's basically providing more tomatoes for less money. I'm getting less money for what I sell because I've invested in advertising. I could do it by just lowering my cost. I could do it by improving the quality of my product and keeping the cost the same. But in the end, I'm getting less for more. And if I can find a way to provide more for less, I get more business. Well, it's the same way if you're an employee. If you could provide more for less, you would do better. Now, you may not think that way. That may go against you. You may think, well, you're saying that I should work more hours and charge less money? Essentially, that's what I'm saying you should do. If you could do 5 hours worth of work in 4 hours, you would be hired before the guy that does 5 hours worth of work in 6 hours. That's just simple math, and it does work. And it works in your best interest. So being a good employee, being a good servant, is not only valuable to the company, it's valuable to you. And that's speaking on it merely on a very worldly or physical level. But Christ here is speaking of something far deeper than being a servant in that way. He's talking about this mentality of entitlement versus the mentality of ministry. And I think that what is lacking in our church is more people with the mentality of ministry. I think we have an abundance already of those who have the mentality of entitlement. I think it's seen whenever we have dinner on the grounds. Now, in our church at the Southside, this isn't seen. We've basically swept this under the carpet because we go to Bill Miller for our dinner on the grounds, and we don't have to pretend that we have some pressing engagement that keeps us from vacuuming the carpet. We don't have to, you know, time our exit, propitiously so that we're not there when it's time to pick up the tables. Time our bathroom break so we're not there when it's time to set out the chairs. We don't have to do any of that. We just go there and just skip that whole thing. But in churches like here where we do that, well, you all know, when it's time to line up to eat, the line goes out the door. When it's time to line up to help set up the tables or vacuum up afterwards or stay late and mop and sweep and clean everything, well, then all those people that are so anxious for dinner on the grounds aren't so anxious to help out anymore. And it's because they do not have a mindset of being a servant. See, a good servant isn't one that you would force to do something. It's one who would do so because he sees it to be his job. If I have an employee that I have to point out every step that needs to be done, he will not be my employee for very long. I'm looking to hire people who are looking for something to do. Saying, I want to do something, I want to be useful, I don't just want to collect a paycheck. If I was trying to hire people who wanted a paycheck, there would be no end to the people I could hire. But if I want to hire someone who wants to do a job, accomplish something, well, that's very difficult to fill that position. I find it much the same way in the church. People talk about having a servant's heart, and that's like gobbledygook, means nothing. Nothing at all. I have a servant's heart. But do you do a servant's job? In my heart, it's like when they say, in my heart, I'm a good person. What that really means is, all that comes out of my mouth is profanity, but in my heart, I'm a good person. All that comes out of me is evilness, but in my heart, I'm a good person. That's kind of what that is. In my heart, I have a servant's heart, but I don't ever do the servant's job.
Amen.
Christ here says that we are to be servants. Now, first of all, this is an observation, what he speaks of here. He says in verse 11 is the verse I'm speaking of in specific. He says, but he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. This is an observation, and it ties into the value system that's going to be enforced in the kingdom of Christ. There is a distinction between the value system we have now, the system by which this world runs, and what they place in priority or in value, and what's going to happen in the kingdom of Christ, and they're not going to be the same. And a lot of Christ's teaching in Matthew was to prepare you mentally, prepare you spiritually for the difference, the change that's going to take place in His kingdom. Things are not going to be the same. Very different. And in the kingdom, the value is going to be placed on those that are servants, not on those who are masters. So those of us who are not accustomed to being a servant are going to find ourselves perhaps not as comfortable in the kingdom of Christ, where that's placed in high regard.
Amen.
Where people aren't trying to work themselves out of being a servant, but rather work themselves into being a servant. See, that's the job ideal, the progression, the path, the career path, ideal career path, perhaps, of most people here would be I want to work myself out of doing the work and work myself into watching people do the work. Of course, anyone who's actually in real management knows that's just a big myth. That's to get you into doing more work than you ever dreamed of doing. Well, that isn't that type of myth, that doesn't exist in the kingdom. You don't get to a point where I get to work myself out of actually doing something. I think that's to the detriment of the church, that we have too many people that view, that believe, that's what they need to do. Their goal, their ambition in the church perhaps, is to get out of doing all the work. Get to the retirement phase in the church. If I could just get to that phase. When in reality, we find that things are upside down, or right side up, however you want to phrase it, in the kingdom, and that those that are young, they're told, you need to not do the work as much, and those that are old need to be doing more of the work. They have the knowledge, they have the experience, they should be the ones, and the novices, it says, no, not them, whereas in the job place, we have it the other way. Let's get all the young men to do all the work, and get all the old men to watch. Where in the church, it should actually be more of the opposite. The young men should be watching and learning, and the older men should be performing and serving. But it's also an admonition. Christ here is admonishing us that if we have any desire in His kingdom, any ambition in the kingdom, then we are admonished to be servants. I find it very sad that there are so few people in our churches, and I sadly probably would include myself with them, of the many that are not this way, but there are so few that really are given over to really serving in the church. And this is I believe this needs to be looked at in all levels. From the very bottom, like who's going to vacuum and sweep and take out the trash and mow the lawn. These are things that have to be done if we're going to have a building or if we're going to have any type of meeting place like this. In Mexico, they get around it. They don't have one. They meet in the park. City takes care of that. And that's a solution to some of those things. But you have a building, so who's going to take care of it? Who's going to fix it? Who's going to, when you go into the bathroom, I remember a long time ago, it's been mentioned that, you know, one of the brothers went in, I think it was John who mentioned this, went in and when he first got here and he went in the men's room and a toilet was clogged. And he comes out and he tells, I think Brian, hey Brian, the toilet's clogged. Now there's someone with a servant's heart. Where are the people in the church, and why is it there are so few people in the church who have that ambition to adopt the value system of Christ and say it is my responsibility, it's my place to be a servant? Why are there so few men in the church who see themselves as servants? It's almost a degrading term to people. Yeah. Be a servant. I had this discussion a while back, and I was talking to a young lady, and we were talking about marriage, and she professes to be a Christian, but doesn't like the traditional biblical roles of marriage, and she says, women submitting. What do you think I am? His servant? Well, that's exactly what I think. Of course, you know, that almost got me slapped. But yeah, that's exactly what I think. I think my wife should be my servant. And I think I should be her servant.
Amen. All right.
Why is it we have so many men that think that it's some type of demeaning thing to be called or to... And that sadly, a lot of it is just the terminology, which I think is absurd. Let's deal with the reality of the issue. It's like I talked about, you know, the terminology of whether you're a servant or employee. If that really bothers you, then I just can insist on continuing to use the word that you are a servant. Why would that bother you so much? You'll never go very far as a waiter if you don't like to be a servant. Isn't that the job description? And whether you realize it or not, that's the job description in every ministry in the church. I think a lot of these young men think they're going to get out in the job place and they're going to open up the Craigslist. Of course, we don't open it up, but whatever. You're going to get to Craigslist and you're going to have all these jobs that says we're looking for someone with no qualifications to be the boss. They're appalled that they must go in at entry level and be subject and serve everybody.
Yeah. Amen.
I think people are amazed that when they get to the church, they figure out after a while that every position in the church is nothing more than a servant.
Amen.
But is it all that strange? When we read the Scriptures, if we would read them and actually pay attention and find out that the Master says that He did not come to be ministered to, but to minister to others.
Amen.
If you walk onto a job site and the owner of the company is there sweeping the floors, I can take away all suspense and tell you what you'll probably be doing as well. If you walk into the church and you realize through the Scriptures that Christ viewed His mission in life was to be a servant, and then somehow we have too many Christians who think that is beneath them. I think it accounts for a great deal of the problems in our marriages and the churches. I could speak to women, and I think that in America that would certainly be a necessary topic. I hope the women invite me to their conference. I'd gladly speak to them on this. But since I'm not, I'm speaking to the men. I'm telling you, it's also equally a problem in the marriages in these churches that men do not think that they're to serve their wives. They got this whole idea of submission completely distorted in their own heads.
Amen.
They think,
Amen.
She submits to me. That means I have all my needs met. Anything I need, she does for me, not me for her. And they're very good at quoting, you know, woman was created for the man, not man for the woman. But the biblical man, the godly man, follows the example of his master who was a servant to the least qualified,
yes, sir,
to the least worthy. Christ gets down on His hands and knees and He washes their feet and He says, if I've done this for you, you should do it as well.
Amen.
Now, I'm not just talking about in physical things. I like to use that because that's a very tangible... And it's much like your money. These tangible things, we like to dismiss them and say, oh, that's not spiritual. That's nothing. Well, then if it's nothing, then just do it. You know, if it's nothing... then just go take care of it. But in reality, these tangible things, like money and the way how you handle your money, give us tremendous insight into how you would handle greater things. Which is why Christ said that if you're not faithful with what is little, you will not be faithful with what is much. And He was speaking about money and your handling of your money. Which is something I had to learn recently, that I had to, if I was going to be trusted or confided with any great measure of value, then I needed to start handling the small measure of value, which is my, you know, dollars and pennies, more correctly. But it's just, I like to deal with this in the physical sense. But this service that we're talking about goes far beyond who's cutting the grass, and it goes far beyond who's standing behind at the dinner on the grounds and helping clean up. Now, I think that every man here should be one of the ones that stays behind and helps get things cleaned up. I find it amazing how slow some of you move when it's moving towards cleaning. Just hoping. It's like my children. I tell my children, and I'm sorry that I'm not trying to really pick on them since they're here, but you know, it's just the experience I have in my life. But I tell my children to do something, and it's like a reverse race to see who's the last one that's actually the first one that actually is going to touch it. And they're like, "Oh, you touched it! You got to do it!" And it's like that sometimes at the dinner on the grounds. It's like, "Let's pick up the chair." So you're like, "Oh,
Amen.
All right, brother. I'll leave you that blessing." Where's another one? Oh, way over there. Why is it that we haven't progressed past this and realized that as Christians, not only is it an observation of that's how the kingdom is going to be and how the church should be, but it's an admonition of Christ saying, if you want to be great, there's only one greatness in the church, and that is those who are servants. Now, I realize that that doesn't fit well in the world view that many of us have, that all of us have grown up in, because the world doesn't see it that way. Just like Christ said, those that are great are called benefactors. They see, you know, kings, and these people, they're waited on hand and foot and carried around, and anything they want, they just snap their fingers and it appears in their hand. And these little peons who are nothing that serve them, and we look at that. And so when we think of a servant, we think of someone who's nameless and anonymous and worthless and useless, and they're just there. They're the unwashed masses. They're the little man that can't get ahead. But Christ doesn't look at it that way. Christ actually sees it the opposite. He sees these people who serve nobody, and He says they serve nothing. That they're of no use, no value at all. That it's the people that know how to serve that He values.
That's true.
And beyond the physical, tangible things, who's serving in the church? I mentioned already in the open meeting about the open meeting. I consider that a point, a place of service. But too many times the open meeting has been turned into nothing but self-service. Getting up talking about themselves. Bragging on themselves, telling their little stories that are of no profit or value at all. None. As if they've exhausted the 31,000 odd verses in the Bible. There's nothing left to say, so let's move on to me. Not sitting at home saying, I want to go and I want to present a message that might help somebody. That might be of enlightenment to somebody. That might be of some value to somebody. Maybe not everybody, but somebody. Rather saying, I wonder what would be funny. I wonder what would get the most laughs. I wonder what would be the most popular. I want to be he's so funny. Is that what your goal is? That's pretty self-serving. That's not a servant's mentality. Amen. Servant's mentality is, I want the boss's endeavor to prosper. I want him to make money. Or in this case, speaking spiritually, I want the church to prosper. That would be what would most benefit Christ. How can I contribute in any small way available to me to that end result? What can I do? Imagine if you approached your job, and some of you might do this, and this might be an illumination as to why you're having trouble at work. But imagine if you approached your job thinking only of what would be best for you. What would serve your best immediate interests. I don't think you'd get very far. Whereas if you're going to get anywhere at all in life, in the job place, I think you need to approach jobs saying, what is in the best interest of the company? What's in the best interest of the shareholders, of the people who earn or that own this? What serves their interest? That's how you need to approach spirituality in the church. You need to come to the church saying, what do I like? What do I want? What songs I want sung or how I want them sung? What messages I think ought to be, but what is in the best interest of the church? How can I best serve the church? Not what is easiest for me, where I think my job description lies, and where I think my gifts lie, but what is it, what can I do to best serve the church? How can you come to that conclusion? Well, I don't think it's that difficult. I think it's part of what I believe the calling to be. I think the calling is about three things, but one of them is where you see a need. Where you see a need, you say, I think there's too much rebuking in the open meeting. Somebody, I think, ought to bring something more inspirational. Well, there you go. So you see a need. Well, I believe that's a calling of God. There's a lot of preaching, but there doesn't seem to be enough solid teaching. Well, there you go. So you've seen a need. You know, there's a lot of preaching and teaching, but there seems to be very little interest in going up and talking to the visitor. I've heard this complaint a lot here in this church over the years. No one's nice to the visitors. You're right, including you. Why is it that all these liberals, and sadly there's a bunch of Christian liberals in the church, want to legislate everyone else into doing something? If you see something that needs to be done, then do it.
Amen.
Why does everyone want to raise a petition to get me to do it? Or whoever, I don't mean me personally, but it's amazing. Oh, the poor need to be helped. Let's all figure out how to get Danny to help them. Why don't you just do it?
Amen.
You know, we could solve almost all the political problems we have in this country if everyone would just do that.
Amen.
You see someone who's in need, you don't need to pass a law about it. Just go take care of the need. Same way in the church. Now, politically, that's just a pipe dream. But in the church, this is actually obtainable. This is something that can happen. Attainable, I'm sorry. This is something that you can actually accomplish. Just a few men in this room could dramatically change the things that you don't like about the church if you personally would just go take care of that. One thing you see ought to be done. Just go do it. Don't sound the trumpet. Don't call up the parade and the ticker tape. Don't be looking around making sure everyone can see you. Just go do it. Somebody ought to go and follow up on these visitors and go visit them. Go visit them. You love to talk about how it's a free country when it benefits you. Well, it's a free country. Go to their house and visit them. Stand at the door and say hi and ask them their name. You say, well, that's a lot of work. Yeah, it's hard to be a servant, isn't it?
Amen.
Service is hard. It's not only an observation and admonition, it's a requirement. This isn't an optional thing. I'd like to say it is and try to tell you that I'm trying to inspire you to make a choice of servanthood and, you know, take the path less trodden. But Christ didn't say it was optional. There is no other job in the church. If you don't like that job, then you're not going to like the church. And I think generations of Christians have been trying to remake the church in their own image. Trying to make a church where that doesn't exist. Where that isn't as necessary. But the way Christ designed the church, He left no place for anyone who didn't desire, who didn't embrace being a servant. There just isn't any place for him. One of the most heart-wrenching, compelling thoughts for me personally is in 1 Corinthians where Paul is arguing against denominationalism. And he presents two arguments. The first one is a real simple one, real simple argument of saying, you know, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase, so it's kind of ridiculous. You're of Paul or of Apollos, because this is a supernatural thing. Nobody can make a seed grow except for God. That's a simple argument. That's kind of ended the issue at hand. But there was a fundamental problem that the church in Corinth had, and he deals with that in the second part of his argument. And a phrase that for a while, it took me a while to, I think, figure out, but it just really, when I did, it just broke me in my heart when he says, this is his argument, he says, all is yours. And what he's saying is, and if you go through and you read the chapter and you follow it, you'll see it. But what he's saying is essentially this. He says, you are not my church. I am your apostle. Because they're saying, I'm of Paul. But Paul says, you're not of me. I'm yours. I think we've gotten in this culture, Christianity has devolved, I believe, into this culture where the churches belong to people. Instead of people belonging to the church. In Ephesians, we're told very clearly that the gifts that are given were given to the church. The church wasn't given to them. Pastors, evangelists, apostles were all gifts given to the church. And that's why he says twice in that argument, all is yours. It doesn't matter what it is. What's high, low, principalities, everything there is yours. Too many ministers, I believe, have come to the point where they think that somehow they've graduated past being servants. My church. I'm not just talking about elders or pastors. It's just this mentality. I've arrived. This is mine. These are here for me. They serve me. I realize nobody would probably vocalize that. And yet, if actions were words, they scream it from the rooftops. Where Paul is saying, you're not mine. You don't belong to me. I belong to you. I'm your apostle. You're not my church. I serve you. You don't serve me. I think every man of us here need to have that same determination.
Amen.
We are not served by the church. We're not here to be served. We're here to serve.
Amen.
Don't look around and say, if everyone else will agree to this, then I will as well. If we're all going to hang together, then we will. But each of us independently and individually, I believe, need to make this determination. I think we need to start practicing it at every level.
Amen.
of our church experience. I think it should be visible at the next dinner on the grounds and the men in this room. I think it should be visible the next time there's a work day at the church. I think it should be visible the next time there's an open meeting.
Amen.
I think it should be visible the next time there's any other need in the church. It's not everyone reverse racing to see who gets there first, who has the terrible misfortune of having to do it. And it's not about trying to psych you out to be giddy about doing something you don't want to do. It's about realizing, I'm in a company, if you'd permit me the metaphor. I'm in a company. And my job as a servant is to procure what's most beneficial for the company. That's what I want to do, because that's my job. I'm in a church. And my responsibility, it doesn't matter what my job title is. My job description is servant. And I look around, and I'm not saying this is what I do, I'm saying this is what I should do. But we look around and we say, where can I serve? Who can I serve?
Amen.
Thank you very much.